Hi, and thanks for tuning in to Women's Voices. My name is Genevieve Gluck, and in this episode I spoke with Beth Johnson, a representative for Speak Up for Women, a New Zealand-based women's rights group working to educate the public about the ways sex self-identification harms women. On July 13th, a billboard paid for by Speak Up for Women was removed following backlash on social media. The billboard, displayed in downtown Wellington, simply stated the dictionary definition of the word woman, a nod to the campaigning done by UK women's rights activist Posy Parker. The billboard was intended to draw attention to sex self-identification clauses within the Births, Death, Marriages, and Relationships Registration Bill, which allows full self-identification and alteration of the sex marker on one's birth certificate without a medical recommendation. In August, the Advertising Standards Authority completed an assessment of complaints about the billboard and decided that, quote, "The majority of the complaints board said in the context of advocacy, advertising the advertisement was socially responsible and did not reach the threshold to cause harm or serious or widespread offense and did not cause fear or distress without justification and was not misleading," end quote. Currently, the Government of New Zealand is holding a public consultation on the bill containing sex self-identification clauses, which is open to members of the public living overseas as well as New Zealanders. The deadline for submitting a response is Tuesday, September 14th, and Speak Up for Women is asking for international support in opposing the legal erasure of women.
Me and another woman here founded Speak Up for Women 3 years ago. And yeah, it's just been growing ever since.
I remember when you had that event that I believe Megan Murphy went to.
But yeah, so Megan Murphy, we brought her out to talk, and that kicked off a whole bunch of shit. I mean, we were already being called a hate group and transphobic and, you know, all of that stuff. And then obviously bringing Megan Murphy out, if that kind of solidified that narrative that we were this evil group. Literally about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we're doing this tour around the country talking about this upcoming legislation, because they're trying to ram through self-ID still. So we decided we'll just hit the road and talk to everyday Kiwis, that's what we call New Zealanders, Kiwis, about what's happening, because there hasn't been any media coverage of it. So we booked public venues all over the country, and everywhere we went, the city council started cancelling our meetings. And the activists were targeting the councils and saying, hey, there's a hate group, because we were advertising, you know, the venues. And so the activists could see on our website where we were going, and then they'd start calling up those city councils and telling them there's a hate group coming, you've got to cancel them, you know, people's lives are at risk, you know, just all this melodramatic stuff. And the councils were buying it, and they were cancelling our meetings. And so we were just like, shit, this is a nightmare. And then literally out of nowhere, this incredible barrister who's a Queen's Counsel, which is like the highest level of barrister you can have, she contacted us and she said, hey, this is nuts. Like, I reckon we can take these councils to court, because New Zealand has a Bill of Rights, which basically, I'm sure America has some version of it in your amendments. You know, it's like entitles everyone to freedom of speech, association and assembly. And public venues should be upholding the Bill of Rights. And so anyway, long story short, she took this case to the High Court and we won. And we were awarded costs against Palmerston North Council. And then after that, suddenly all the city councils were fine with us booking venues. So our talk has, you know, carried on, gotten bigger and bigger, and we're just merely, you know, having our talks. But if it hadn't been for that, I mean, that case cost $60,000 to take. We couldn't have done that if it wasn't for the lawyers saying that they would act for us and only get paid if they got awarded costs against the councils, because we couldn't have gambled that much money. Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, that was a big ramble, but yeah, that's us.
Well, that's incredible. And that mayor, what was his name? Campbell Barry?
Yeah.
Is that right? That he said... He basically compared you to trash, didn't he? He said something like, you can come have a meeting in my waste bin.
Yeah, he said if this group's looking for a venue in the hut, which is the town he manages, you know, we've got some new rubbish bins. So yeah, basically implying we could get in the bin. He's like a young woke mayor, but it was quite embarrassing for him because the High Court ruling had happened a couple of days before and he obviously hadn't heard. So he just got absolutely slammed. It was like, dude, you know, you're a couple of days behind, like no one's hating on this group anymore. And he actually had to issue an apology. So our lawyers sent him a letter saying this is unacceptable, you know, for various different reasons, but you're a public official, you need to uphold the Bill of Rights. This group has been vilified, you know, here's the vindication of it. And you have to apologise or, you know, you'll be in trouble. And so, of course, he immediately apologised.
In my opinion, that apology that I saw on Twitter didn't seem very sincere. But anyway, I suppose any apology is better than none, I guess.
Yeah, we just need to curb the worst of these, you know, these kind of people who think they are on the moral high ground and right about an issue are just so mean and so bullying. And I think he's one of those. He thinks he understands this issue and that he's on the right side and therefore justifies any type of horrendous bullying behaviour. So yeah, just a few of those people having to backtrack, hopefully will set the tone that it's actually not okay. Unfortunately, Mayor Forstater's ruling, we thought that that might have more impact, but no one here covered it. So no one actually understands that gender critical views are worthy of respect. New Zealand still thinks it's okay to hate on feminists. And our High Court ruling hopefully goes a little way in the same direction. But yeah, I mean, deep down, New Zealand is still just a bunch of, you know, frontier misogynists. Kind of, yeah, where we're stuck.
Well, that seems to be the case in other countries as well, about not only Maya's case, but also Kira Bell. Just speaking from, you know, being an American, the major publications continue to go ahead and push forward these kinds of strange propaganda about puberty blockers and so on, as if the Kira Bell ruling had never happened. Yeah, they're just like completely ignoring it. So I'm not kind of surprised to hear.
It's not just the media that's ignoring it. You know, the really scary thing is our own Ministry of Health is ignoring it. Like, we have sent them so much information about the fact that, you know, the Kira Bell ruling happened, that the NHS has pulled down all reference to puberty blockers being safe and reversible. But our Ministry of Health's own website still says they're safe and reversible. Like, are we a year on now from that ruling? And we've told them so many times and they come back and go, oh no, this is still we're comfortable with what it says, it's still the best practice or the latest thinking or something. And it's like, it's not, you're taking your advice from WPATH or whatever they're called and you're not looking any further than that. Yeah, so definitely.
So tell me what happened with the billboard.
Yeah, so we've got this bill that's coming up before Parliament in August, and it's going to its second reading. So it's almost law, basically. Once it's gone through its second reading, it's just goes to its third reading and then it's law. And it has in it sex self-identification clauses, and it will allow people to self-identify their sex on their birth certificate. So there'll be no evidence of the person's birth sex available to the providers of any female services or spaces. The original birth records will be sealed so that you'll never get access to them unless, like, there's a judge rules that the police need access to it or whatever. Like, it's really high. Your regular service won't have access to it. So it's a really serious form of sex self-ID. And we put up that billboard because there's been no public discussion. This bill hasn't gone to consultation. New Zealanders haven't had their say. Most New Zealanders don't even know it's happening. All the coverage has been positive, you know, about trans rights. So we put up that billboard because we knew it would get a reaction, and we wanted to draw people's attention to the fact that the word woman was actually being redefined in our laws. So it was just the words adult human female, and it had our URL that directed people to our website, and on our website had information about the bill. We let the billboard company know a day or two before they put up the billboard that they could expect some activists to cancel them and try and have it taken down. And we sent them a link to the High Court ruling to reassure them that we're not a hate group and actually we have a right to talk about these issues. So they seemed fine with that. They put the billboard up and then they got inundated with complaints. So they had, I don't know how many, a couple of dozen complaints. They phoned us up. So they put up the billboard on the Monday. On the Tuesday, they phoned us up and they said, we're taking the billboard down. We've had all these complaints. And we said, don't you dare take it down. You're going to make it way worse if you do. They're just bullying. But it turns out that some of their major advertisers had been bullied as well, and that one of their major advertisers had contacted them. We don't know what the conversation was, but essentially, take it down. It was a football club in Wellington. So yeah, the activists targeted the football club and said, we know you're a major advertiser of, that uses this media company, and now they're running this hateful billboard, and you know, you have to tell them to take it down. And the owner of the football, the CEO of the football club, replied and said, yep, you know, I'll speak to them. So it was that kind of bro to bro kind of conversation that resulted in less than 24 hours. They had abseilers back up on the building, rip it. This was a huge billboard, like huge. They had to take it down with abseilers, and it was gone. And then of course the activists are crowing online that they've had us shut down. Absolutely gutting, but kind of expected, because that's the way these people behave. The interesting thing will be, obviously our barrister is champing at the bit to go back into court, and they've breached contract. Like, we have a contract for that billboard, but we're not so keen on that course of action just yet, because when the billboard was up, there was 34 complaints made to the Advertising Standards Authority complaining that it breached advertising standards. And the authority is investigating. So they've asked us to respond, and we've sent a really detailed response. And when the authority comes back and rules that the billboard isn't hateful, and that it can, you know, doesn't breach standards, then we will have all the ammunition we need to show that this was just a bullying campaign, and we'll be able to put that billboard back up, and no one will be able to pull it down. So yeah, that's our plan.
Yeah, they have no basis to say it's violated standards. I mean,
no,
right?
They're saying it's a dog whistle, that yes, it's just the dictionary definition, but what it really is a dog whistle to transphobic, hateful people.
That's completely subjective. It's based on total conjecture. So that'll be interesting, I guess, because they'll have to decide if basically, I mean, that's a question of, you know, someone's subjective reality versus material reality, if I've ever seen one, right?
Yeah.
If that's going to court, then they'll have to decide between two versions of reality, I guess.
Yeah. Well, like we said, you know, if it was just a dog whistle, the nature of a dog whistle is that only certain people can hear it. Now, we're not going to spend $6,000 dog whistling to our own followers. Like, nobody else would hear that dog whistle except into critical feminists. And we actually want the general public to be aware of this bill and the fact that the definition is being challenged. So it's not a dog whistle. And even if it was a dog whistle, I'm not sure that breaches advertising standards, but it's definitely not that. So that'll be really interesting. And then we just have to decide if we want to force that billboard company to put them back up, or if we just want to find a different billboard company that's prepared to put them up. That's that. It was really amazing, like, so fantastic to see the billboard go up, and then devastating, just devastating to see it come down.
Well, in a way, sometimes these kinds of things draw more attention to what's really going on. I mean, has that been your experience with this so far?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, if they just left us alone, yes, we would be having our meetings and we'd have our billboard and we'd probably attract a few thousand people to understand what's going on. But pulling down our billboard made national news in so many different news outlets. They've been protesting our events. Again, our events that attract maybe 100 people, 80 people, you know, they turn up with 300 protesters outside, and suddenly I'm on the television news explaining what we're doing and why we're being protested. So yeah, they can't help themselves. They bring, our political opponents are the ones that actually bring us the media attention that we desperately need. If they ignored us, we wouldn't be really, well, we might. I mean, we might get some attention, but nothing compared to what they bring us. Yeah, so thank you.
Could you tell me about that event that you had recently? Because I saw reported in the media that there were 1,000 protesters.
That'd have been the Herald.
Okay.
Our news media is an embarrassment, honestly. Like, we've got a couple of news outlets that have some grown-ups left in them, and the rest of them are just kids. That news article was ridiculous, the one you're referring to. There wasn't 1,000 people there. A very generous headcount would say 400. There were definitely hundreds. The TV news reported that there were hundreds, so they didn't think there were thousands. It definitely wasn't. We were above them on the first floor looking down into the car park, and we did some pretty good head counts, and yeah, a couple of hundred at best. But I mean, it was a big intimidating crowd, and our we had 130 people at our event, so they were at least two or three times as big as us. And all the women coming to our event had to walk past them to come in. They were just chanting their usual, you know, trans rights or human rights kind of things. We having had to go to the High Court to secure our right to meet and speak, I've become much more familiar with the Bill of Rights than I otherwise would have. And the right to peaceful assembly and peaceful protest is enshrined in our Bill of Rights. So I'm really comfortable and happy that they have their peaceful protests, and they go about and do that as long as it's in a peaceful and lawful way. So yeah, they had that meeting, they had their rally, and we had our meeting. And yeah, our meeting was fantastic. We're about to release a video of the meeting, so that'll be out in the next couple of days, and then you'll be able to watch it as well. It's pretty dry. It's not exciting and transphobic and hateful and all the other things that people probably want it to be. We actually just talk a lot about the law and various different impacts. So yeah, that's half an hour of your life you can look forward to.
So when I was talking with you previously, a few days ago, you had mentioned that the public opinion is starting to kind of shift on this issue as compared to when you started in 2018.
Only in much that it's hard to really know what's shifting is the media's reporting. So from the day we formed, like literally the day we stood up our website, Gender Minorities Aotearoa and a couple of other gender activists pointed to our group and said, that's a hate group, they're bigots, they hate trans people, you know, and they set that narrative, and they were already established. They're government funded, they're international lobby group funded, they have paid staff, like they're serious organisations, and they're very close to legislators, and based in Wellington, you know, they have a lot of influence. And so they set the tone of how the media looked at our group. And so for the first year, whenever we were reported about, we were called transphobic or a hate group, or nobody ever spoke to us. Like, they wrote about us, but they never spoke to us. That's changing now. So especially just this year with these talks, you know, as I said, I was on the TV news, and I actually got to say what we're meeting about, you know, that we're here to say that sex sometimes still matters in life, and that it should remain protected in law, and that we want to have a conversation about how we keep sex protected alongside this gender identity that some people have. You know, now they're calling us a controversial group. So we're no longer a hate group, we're a controversial group, which we're kind of okay with. So just the media's framing of us has changed a bit, and not all of them. Some of them are still being awful about us, but some of the more grown-up publications are kind of seeing that we're not hateful and that we actually have some valid, genuine concerns. And hopefully if the media's reporting is changing, as we're seeing it changing, then I hope that feeds through into the public sentiment changing. Yeah.
This is a bit of a tangent, maybe, but can we talk about Laurel Hubbard for a second?
what can I say?
What's the general, first of all, are people in New Zealand aware of Laurel Hubbard? And if so, what tends to be the kind of response that you might get when you talk about it?
You know, it's interesting because New Zealand is, we really pride ourselves on being fair. And, you know, we've got this be kind, be fair thing. We love our sport. And the general public are absolutely embarrassed and shocked and appalled at this. I don't personally blame Laurel, and I don't think it's about him. I think it's the lawmakers and the policymakers. It's the IOC, it's everybody who's allowed, because obviously Laurel's operating within the rules. Now, whether or not he's doing it because just because he wants to win, or because he genuinely believes he's a woman and he wants to compete, whatever his reasons are, you know. So anyway, that's just me personally. I think it's the rulemaker's fault. But the general New Zealand public are disgusted and horrified and are embarrassed and they're outraged. And we've seen that when, for example, NewsHub, one of our local news outlets, ran a poll and asked, you know, if it was fair. And 92% of New Zealanders said no. And then they shut the poll down. But whenever they post an article about Laurel Hubbard, they always turn off comments. So, you know, that you won't see all the people disagreeing. But our Minister for Sport is behind it. Our Prime Minister says, you know, Laurel's operating within the rules. So, you know, it's great, and it's great that we've got transgender athletes at this level. And yes, yeah, so all of our ministers in the government are supportive. This government's pushing self-ID. Our Human Rights Commissioner doesn't, he says trans women are women in sport, in prisons, there's no problem, they're just women. So at the highest levels of our country, they support it, but the man on the street thinks it's an abomination.
Can I ask you again about that bill? So the sex self-ID bill that you had mentioned, you said was going to allow people to be able to change even their birth certificates, be able to mm-hmm. have that be private. Would there mm-hmm. also be some kind of, say, like a fine or a fee for things like misgendering or, for example, single-sex facilities? Is that also affected?
Yeah, so that's our main concern, is that that single-sex facilities, so the bill has this ridiculous clause in it that says, notwithstanding anything in this bill, a person's sex will continue to be determined by the general laws of New Zealand. So it's a catch-all thing that says the birth certificate is now just a piece of paper. It might say female, but that doesn't mean this person is female. The general laws of New Zealand will decide if this person is female. Now, what that means is that if a person, a male to female transgender person, turned up at a woman-only gym and joined, and the operator said, hey, we're female only, and they said, well, I am a female, and they said, oh, I don't believe you, like, you look like, you know, a male, they could whip out their birth certificate and would say female. Now, the gym wouldn't have anything to go by other than what they see in front of them to say that this person is not a female. So they technically, potentially could still say, if they had any, you know, balls for it, basically, they could say, hey, no, I think you're male, I'm not letting you in. That person could then go to that. So this is a long explanation, but this is just to show how muddy this bill is that our government is creating. That person could then go to the Human Rights Commission. The Human Rights Commission would probably take their side and they'd say, yes, this is, you've been discriminated against. You're clearly female because you think you are. And therefore, we will support you in taking a human rights complaint against this gym. Now, the gym would defend themselves in court. They'd need to pay for expensive barristers. Ultimately, it would be the general laws of New Zealand that would decide if this person was male or female. And that's a whole bunch of case law that goes into various different things. And so who knows what the law would decide? Probably would decide that this person was male if they were just self-ID'd, if they hadn't had any hormones or surgery or anything else. And the general laws would probably say that they're male. But that's the situation that this law is creating, that the providers of female services will have to take their chances in either letting these people in or declining them and seeing if they end up in court defending themselves against the power of the state.
And the basis for this would not so much be dependent upon, for example, how long someone's been maybe taking hormones or something, or a recommendation from a doctor?
So, you know, self-ID on the birth certificate is literally just sign a form and you'll get your new birth certificate. So nothing. No doctor, no doctor, no psychiatrist, no physical change, no even change of appearance, just sign a form, new birth certificate.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy. And our government doesn't even see that this could potentially be a problem. They don't even see that it could be an issue. But my bigger concern with it is not that guys would change their birth certificates to take advantage, because, you know, predators probably aren't going to bother. Some might, but most probably wouldn't. They're just going to take advantage of the fact that the social understanding of what a trans woman is going to change. And that these gyms and school, you know, pools and wherever else are just going to, women are not going to feel comfortable challenging these males in their spaces anymore, because no one wants to be called a bigot or hateful or a transphobe for saying to a guy, hey, you can't be in here. Because what if he is a trans woman? Mm-hmm. And actually it's that breakdown of our social contract that I think is going to be the bigger issue.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, the breakdown of the social contract, also reality, you know, the ability to trust your gut. You see what's right in front of you, you know?
Yeah. It's really shocking. And our government's just walking into it totally with their head in the sand, saying no one would take advantage of this. This is just to relieve an administrative burden on transgender people, and they're not looking down the road and seeing the unintended consequences of it. Yeah, I hope they watch our video.
There's a lot of reasons why, or at least there are a lot of reasons why I speculate that lawmakers go along with this in the face of, you know, obvious potential and real ongoing issues that are happening, you know, as in women's prisons and so on. But I'm curious what you think the fundamental or the majority reason might be. Do you think it's to appear progressive, or do you think it's just sexism pure and simple? I mean, what would you kind of pin it down to if you were to try?
I don't say, fucked if I know, honestly. It amazes me. I think a lot of our politicians are just spineless, and they're so terrified of being called transphobic and being on the wrong side of history, like, you know, so many politicians were with the gay rights thing. They just going with the flow and going where they think it's safe for their careers to go. It takes a very brave politician, as we've seen, Senator Claire Chandler in Tasmania, to stand up against the flow. I think especially in a country where we've got a progressive government, we've got a Labour government. So I think there's a bit of that. I think some of them have been lobbied really hard and are actually indoctrinated into queer theory, postmodernism. I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't some money involved somewhere. I'd like to see more on that in New Zealand, but I don't know. But I think overall it's just a bunch of spineless people not standing up for women's rights. So a good chunk of misogyny in there probably as well. Yeah, just everything. Just taking the path of least resistance, and steamrolling women is the least resistance.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I mean, at this point, I really shouldn't be surprised by anything anymore, but the way that they lit up the building that you had your event in.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, I mean, the city council, I believe, had decided to kind of project the trans flag onto the building while you were having your meeting. Is that right?
Yeah. So that's right. So basically, when we were in the High Court in Auckland, suing Auckland and Palmerston North councils to have our venue secured, Wellington City Council sent a lawyer up to sit in the back of the courtroom and take notes, because they were trying to work out if they could lawfully cancel our meeting. Of course, we won our High Court case. So their lawyer would have scuttled back to Wellington and said, we can't cancel these people. They've just, you know, won their court case. And so the councillors and the mayor of Wellington were so pissed off at this that they said, well, we'll just light up the building and the trans flag then. So they literally used taxpayers' money to send a fuck you message to our group, which is insane. I mean, it's just insane, because it's political, and, you know, they shouldn't be using taxpayers' money to fight a grassroots feminist group who are talking about an upcoming piece of legislation. That's nuts. And like we said to them, we don't have a problem with the trans flag. you are the ones that are creating an anti-trans narrative, because actually we're just women talking about women's rights, and that is not synonymous with being anti-trans. And you're grown-ups, and you're actually scaring kids by telling them that there are these nasty people out there that don't like trans people. You're actually creating this issue that doesn't need to exist. So I actually blame them. I really, one of those counsellors isn't even seeing straight on this issue because she's got a transgender child who, you know, no doubt is telling her all the things, like, you know, that we don't want them to exist and all of that drama. But yeah, she's really, really swinging for us. And it's not appropriate with public funds. I think a lot of it is driven from their kids. Like, and then our privacy commissioner, another commissioner of our public service, he has a trans child, and he wrote an opinion piece in a publication a couple of years ago about us and what a hateful, horrible group we are. This is the privacy commissioner. And it was like, where the fuck is this guy coming from? And then we got to the end of the article, and his child said to him that knowing that we were out there made them feel unsafe. And so this guy has come out swinging for us in a national publication, using the might of his office to get this piece published, because his kid has given him a sob story about not feeling safe because we're around. And I think that's actually a lot of these adults who are swinging for us have trans kids, because there's no other reason why they'd be so venomous towards us. You know, if we're right, then they're wrong to be medicating their kids and agreeing that they were born in the wrong body. You know, if the feminists are right, then they're wrong, and they can't live with that.
Yeah, it's a really big lie.
It's a really big lie.
They have to defend it because they've gone along with it, right? Is that the sunk cost fallacy?
Total sunk, yeah. And they believe they're doing the right thing for their kid. They have to believe it because it's the choice they've made. And to be wrong is it's life or death, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And yet they continue to push this idea that they're the ones being erased, or their existence is being questioned or something. And yet you can't even have a dictionary definition of a woman, you know, like that was literally erased. It was, yeah, I mean, yeah, in the correct use of literally, it was pulled down.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, of course, you would agree with me. I think, you know, we're both on the same page here, but yeah, it's women that are being erased, whose existence is being denied, called into question at every turn. And yet we're constantly being told that it's the other way around. I mean, I just find there's so many of those types of things with this debate where it's a complete reversal of what's actually happening. It's kind of astonishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I struggle. Yeah, we're only erasing them as much as we're acknowledging that they're male and they'll always be male. But that's not to say that they're not, and they can't be trans women. They can't be males that live as women. And in almost all circumstances, that's socially fine. And there's only a few spaces and services and instances where the fact that they're trans women as distinct from women needs to be acknowledged. You know, like, that's not a radical position, and that's not an erasing of their existence. That's saying, yeah, sure, be a woman most of the time. And you know what? There's going to be some times when, you know, no, you can't, you know, preoperatively come into our changing rooms, or, you know, take our scholarship positions or win on our track. You know, there's just going to be some times when we say women actually are separate, and that's not erasing you. But this is the end game of postmodernism, right? Just burn it all to the ground. Nothing exists or matters. I actually sometimes think these kids are nihilists. Like, I think the smarter ones of them, I looked at those protesters out there and I thought, okay, some of you are just sheep and you're going with the flow. And some of you look like you're really smart, probably nihilists who just want to burn all to the ground because the planet's burning and you don't care. Yeah, in my darker moments, I think that's what's happening. They just want to fuck it all up.
I mean, this is one thing that they can take in control of, right? In a world where, you know, climate change is something that most people feel helpless to stop, or all of the other various problems in the world, this is one thing that's so individualized. It's like sold to you that you can have a solution for it. You can just change the way you talk, the way you dress, and then the world would be better. I mean, it's really it's really smart marketing in that regard, you know.
It's like the end game of capitalism. They've gone up the Maslow hierarchy of needs to that self-actualization bit, and they've just segmented it into a market of like 78 different genders and sold this, yeah, this whole new, it's just a whole new market for selling things.
Create the problem, sell the solution.
Yeah.
And then the individual becomes the product. You know, your image is the advertisement for yourself, which is the product. I mean, just.
Yeah. It's such an individualistic, consumerist response to, you know, the issue of sex and gender. Like, you know, the conflict of sex and gender, of course it's real. And of course, you know, some people really struggle with gender roles. I mean, fuck, I do. Like, most feminists struggle with gender roles. But this is just such an individualistic capitalist response to it. It's like, I'm not going to fight for structural change. I'm not going to fight the system. I'm just going to change me and, you know, buy my way out of this and consume my way out of it just to satisfy my own need without changing anything.
It's like you can get your identity through products or the projected self that you put out there, right? That's yeah. I find it so interesting that this idea that identity used to be something that you did, right? Mm. Whether it was like a hobby or a job you know, it was like an action. And now it's sort of become, it's sort of slowly changed now into like things that you have. So owning things became an identity. So you had like collectors, you know, material possessions. Now that's shifted again to your appearance.
Ideas. Yeah, things you think. Yeah.
I mean, so it's like, no wonder there's this constant need to control what everyone thinks of you, because your identity is then constructed on what
people think,
people perceive, rather than internally, you know. So it's in this constant state of having to assert itself because it's not got any like scaffolding under it. It's just complete artifice. So I just think the whole ideology of it, it's never ever going to be stable. It's always going to be in flux, you know.
Yeah,
it's really sad to tell children that that's what selfhood means, that that's what identity means, that you don't have any control over it, that it depends on what other people think of you. It's really kind of crushing.
And if people love you, they'll lie to you. Like, otherwise you'll have to leave them and never talk to them again. We had these kids at our event in Christchurch. About 6 or 7 young trans activists came into our meeting, and they were so young, they were with their teacher. So we'd said to them, they can actually come in as long as they listen and save their comments for the question and answer time. So they did, of course, because they're good little school kids, they just listened. And then in the question and answer time, you know, it all came out that we were transphobic. And when I drilled into why they thought that, it was because I kept referring to the fact that trans women were male. And that was transphobic, because you can't say that they're male because it's not true, they're female. And we couldn't get past that point. And they actually believed that, and therefore they believed that we were transphobic and hateful, and, you know, that they needed puberty blockers or they were going to kill themselves. And these kids are like 15, you know, they had their teacher there, and they were just so deep in this insane ideology. And it's come up, you know, it's come through their school. Their teachers sat there with them, like supporting them in this. I don't know what my point is. I guess it's just that it's, yeah, it's crazy.
Are they getting it from the public education system, or are they getting it from online mostly?
Both. I think they were getting it online first, but our public education system just released new guidelines for the schools to talk about relationships and sexuality. And in it, it's fully indoctrinated. It talks about the fact that trans girls should be allowed to use whichever facilities they choose. The idea that, you know, I don't think they exactly use the word, but the idea that some kids are born in the wrong body is in there. And, you know, we released those guidelines 2 days after the UK released their guidelines. I don't know if you saw, they completely stripped all of that gender mumbo jumbo out of their guidelines. But we obviously we're a couple of years behind the UK in everything we do. And so we just released guidelines that look just like their old guidelines. So these kids were already indoctrinated before those guidelines came out. So that must be online. But our guidelines have just caught up with that. So we'll just reinforce it. So yeah, we've probably got a whole generation of kids coming through who are not basing their beliefs about gender and sex in reality or science, but just in propaganda.
Do you think the children who are growing up with this now will begin to reject it as they become adults? I mean, obviously we can't know an answer to that, but I, you know, just speaking for myself, you know, being in my 30s now, some of the things that I thought about when I was a teenager or even early 20s, yeah, it tends to shift sort of naturally, yeah, with time.
Yeah.
Is that something that you think is a possibility that to be hopeful for?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the younger generation that's coming through will see how messed up the older generation is. I mean, when I say the older generation, I mean the kids that are like 10 and 11 right now. I feel like our hope's kind of with them, because you know, already I've had some conversation with younger kids that just don't, you know, they still believe boys are boys and girls are girls, and they don't believe, you know, anything different. I don't know if they'll be indoctrinated as well, who knows. I do think people will grow out of it, because I think that, you know, we've got reality on our side. And I don't think, no matter how much money and how much governments legislate, you can't legislate reality out of existence. It's always going to exist. It might be really bad for women, because our oppression won't be documented and there won't be data on it, and, you know, there'll be more abuse or whatever. But we're still going to exist. We're going to go on existing, and that's not going to change. So at some point, I think, yeah, people will see that.
On September 9th, I talked again with Beth Johnson for an update regarding the decision by the Advertising Standards Authority, as well as an open consultation by the New Zealand government regarding the Sex Self-Identification Bill. Hey, Beth. Nice to talk with you again.
Hi. Thanks for having me back.
So there have been some updates to the situation regarding the billboard that you had, which, by the way, again, it just said woman, adult, human, female, and it was removed from a building in, I think it was July, but it looks like the Advertising Standards Association said that it was actually, well, they upheld your complaint for having it removed. And it says that the majority of complaints, the board said, in the context of advocacy advertising was socially responsible and did not reach the threshold to cause harm or serious or widespread offense and did not cause fear or distress.
Yeah, or did not cause fear or distress without justification. And was not misleading. So, yeah, essentially what happened was, since we spoke last time, I think I might have told you, we put the billboard up, 34 people complained about it, and within 24 hours, the billboard company had caved in and pulled it down. People had also complained to the Advertising Standards Authority, so they made this ruling that basically said, you know, the billboard's fine, we're completely justified to have it up. So that really vindicated our group. And obviously a lot of people are really relieved that the dictionary definition of the word woman is, you know, doesn't breach any advertising standards. So that's great. But of course, the billboard came down. The billboard company, even though the Advertising Standards Authority has cleared the billboard, and the advertising company Go Media had said that they thought it was in breach of the advertising standards, which is why they justified pulling it down. Even though now it's been cleared, they are refusing to put it back up. So, I mean, look, we had a contract with them. They breached their contract. The only reason that they would be allowed to pull an ad down would be that if it breached Advertising Standards Authority, like the small print of their own contract says that that's the only condition, you know, if it breached regulations or that they were required to pull it down. So they're in breach of their own contract. But in order to enforce our rights, we'd have to sue them. We'd have to go to court. And what's happened now, and we would absolutely do that. New Zealand's just had a COVID outbreak and we're all in lockdown. and submissions on this bill. The government's opened public submissions and they're closing on Tuesday. So it's Tuesday the 14th. So there's sort of no point in us getting that billboard back up by the time we took them to court. No one's going to see it in the middle of a lockdown anyway. So we'll just take the moral victory and we'll save the money. Yeah.
And speaking of that, you had an advertisement in the newspaper recently, the Otago Daily News, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, the Otago Daily Times. Oh, so it was exactly, Otago. It's a nice Japanese pronunciation of Otago. Same ad, exact same ad. It just had a call to action on it, say no to sex self-identification, and then it linked to our website. And that ran with no problems. We've run that ad in a lot of newspapers actually across the country. We've put a lot of money behind some digital banner ads as well to click through to our website. We've built a submission builder that helps people go through and formulate their submissions to the parliament, to the consultation committee. So that ad, a couple of people complained about that ad to the editor of the Otago Daily Times, and these are the same sorts of complaints, the hyperbolic, it's transphobic kind of complaints that you get. The Otago Daily Times issued a kind of mealy-mouthed apology saying that, they don't agree with anything we say, but they respect the rights of free speech, and the Advertising Standards Authority had cleared this ad, so they weren't going to do anything about it. Fine, if they don't agree with the dictionary definition of the word woman, then we can't really help them there. But it's annoying, and the worst part is so that was a publisher, Allied Press, who own most of the local newspapers in the South Island of New Zealand. There's another big publisher called NZME in the North Island. And having seen what the Otago Daily Times published and the complaints that they received, NZME, so hold on, I'll backtrack. So, yeah. These complaints, right, there were a few complaints, and another media outlet called News Hub picked up these complaints, of which one of them was like some random guy on Twitter that has 400 followers who described the ads as despicable. And this young journalist picked up these Twitter comments and wrote a whole article about these despicable ads appearing in the newspaper. It's just like these young university boys deciding that this feminist activism is despicable and writing about it and being published. And, it's just so outrageous. And so that's what happened. And anyway, then we got a lawyer, an email from the chief counsel at NZME, who's the North Island advertiser that we had a whole bunch of ads booked for, saying, we've seen the backlash that the ads got from the Otago Daily Times, and so we're exercising our rights to pull your advertising. They've pulled the ads now. So it's just this ongoing battle of the media makes a story out of nothing and then uses it as justification to cancel ads.
It's really crazy that Twitter trolls would be taken more seriously than Advertising Standards Authority. The Standards Authority said it's fine.
Yeah.
And yet a couple of, maybe a few angry people on Twitter saying something about it has more weight.
But you've got to remember, these journalists that are writing these stories, inverted commas, they're mates with these Twitter trolls. And these journalists are kids, and they are journalist activists, and they're writing these stories, and God knows why the editors are publishing them, but they're just wielding this incredible political power. And they're really, it wasn't a story, there weren't enough complaints to make it a story. There wasn't any reason that became a story other than our political opponents with the power.
Isn't that interesting? I see that a lot in the US. I've actually been trying to track it, where the activists are friends with the journalists, or in some cases, the journalists themselves are the activists that you see on Twitter also.
Yeah.
And there's this whole kind of like network of these younger people, many of them who themselves may identify as trans, sort of having this total control over even very large media outlets. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I had kind of just thought, oh, this is probably an American thing that's happening.
No, it's not. Look, I think it's, I mean, this is a whole other topic, but I mean, I studied journalism at university, and I know, I understand, you know, that social justice, leftist kind of thinking, obviously that's throughout universities, but also what's happened with the whole industry now is all the old school investigative journalists, they've all gone into PR and corporates, because there's no money left in long form journalism and investigative journalism. It's all clickbait. They're terribly paid. I mean, it's appalling. I wouldn't get out of bed for what they're paid. And so what you have is fresh out of school, fresh out of uni, idealistic, you know, 19-year-olds, they can't even spell, but they're super politically motivated. And like you say, they're the activists, or and or really good friends with the activists. And so they pick up their tweets and turn them into stories. And you've got, just a disproportionate amount of power over political and public discourse.
And of course, the more outrageous the headline, the more attention, the more clicks, the more shares.
I mean, of course, what always happens is the Streisand effect. So today I've just been fielding emails of support. People can't understand why the dictionary definition of the word woman is despicable. And I don't even joke, we are not able to spend the advertising dollars as fast as they're being donated to us at the moment. So when people call the dictionary definition of the word woman despicable, you know, funnily enough, a lot of women wake up and go, hey, what's going on? And when they look into it, they don't take a little 19-year-old he, him journalist's word for the fact that we're despicable. They do a bit of reading, and suddenly they're putting money in our account. So, you know, we would like to thank them for their activism and raising awareness about cause. But, you know, it does actually hamper what we're doing as well, because we're having ads pulled. And even though this bill, which will, you know, it's hugely controversial. It allows people to self-identify the sex on birth certificates. Not one media outlet in New Zealand has covered the fact that it's open for public consultation right now. So they're pushing this consultation through in less than 3 weeks, in the middle of a COVID outbreak, nationwide lockdown. People can't even get to the post office. They can't get to the library to use a computer. Like, literally everything's shut and our government's running a consultation. We asked for an extension. They said no. And the media is not even covering it. It's not even newsworthy. That the government is short-sheeting our democracy in this way, and yet the fact that we ran some ads is a headline. If you want to see our pinned tweet, which is at Speak Up for Women NZ, and the four is the number four, we've pinned a tweet there, which links through to our website with guidance on how to make a submission, and you can click through from there to the government's website. The government has said that they are accepting international submissions, so anyone with experience of self-ID or any expertise at all, or anybody who just wants to go through and even just as simply write, I support the submission of Speak Up for Women and I oppose sex self-identification, no, that would be enough. We'd really appreciate that. And there's some major fish hooks in this law. It's not going to be a good thing for women. It's not a good thing for transsexuals either. It's just purely ideological. The bill itself is the Births, Deaths and Marriages Bill. So it was meant to be an uncontroversial bill that just digitalized, you know, allowed for the digitalization of births and death records, and, you know, so people could access on the internet. It was meant to be a really basic, boring bill. The sex self-identification clauses are the focus of this consultation, because that's a controversial part. So it will allow people to self-identify their sex by just signing a form. So they call it a statutory declaration. So sign a form to say that you identify as and intend to live as the nominated sex. You can change your sex as many times as you want throughout your life. So there's no limit. That you can choose male, female, or other, and the other genders will be controlled within regulations, not within not defined within the law, because of course you can use words like male or female in the law still currently, probably won't be able to in the future, but they recognize that genders change and are added to the list so often that they couldn't possibly encode it in the law. So they're going to control a list of genders in regulations, which they'll be able to periodically update as new genders emerge.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah. It's proper bonkers. And the minister in charge of the bill said, sex and gender are not the same thing, but the birth certificate is kind of a proxy for people's gender because so many people confuse sex and gender. So we're just going to confuse it further by allowing self-identification of gender. And then down in clause 80 of the bill, they have put, I can't remember the exact words, but it essentially says, and this is our one little glimmer of hope, that for the purposes of establishing eligibility for accessing single-sex provisions, so like women's single-sex spaces, services, sports, service providers can refer to information other than the birth certificate to assess eligibility. So it's basically saying you can rely on your own eyes to decide if someone's male or female. So females still legally have a right to single-sex spaces in New Zealand. This clause makes that clear. But in practicality, there'll be no way of enforcing it or assessing it, because if there's any dispute, if a service provider says, I don't think you're eligible because, you look like a man to me, and they say, well, I've got a female birth certificate, here you go. Where does a service provider go from there? There's no identity document now in New Zealand that can be used as evidence in sex. So a service provider has an option of either accepting this person on their say-so or declining them and risking going to court. It's a really bad situation.
Yeah, and on an individual level, what it does is it puts women in danger and then puts the onus on them to say something about it, which puts them into further danger, if that man were to get upset at being challenged.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, and I think women will even just stop challenging altogether because, people aren't going to be aware of their rights. They're not going to be aware that hidden down in clause 80, it says that they're still allowed sex-based rights. The birth certificate being most people's understanding of somebody's legal sex, service providers and women, there's going to be mass social confusion about this, and women will just stop challenging, and it won't matter if somebody's actually changed their birth certificate or not. No one's going to challenge them to find out. I think it's right. People are just going to be, I think women will just start self-excluding from any services where they feel like, they aren't single sex. And we're going to see the most vulnerable women excluding themselves. So we've got, a large population of refugees and immigrants here, for example, from Muslim countries. And we had that horrific shooting in the mosque a couple of years ago, and our government, supposedly really cares about that community. But those women are not being considered in this bill that's going to completely eradicate single-sex spaces and services, which they need. The women who are going to be the most affected aren't going to be making a fuss. And so the government's put in, sorry, I'm just ranting about this, I'm so angry. They put in saying, we'll review in 5 years' time. We'll review to see how it's going, to see, if there's been any negative impacts. And so, in our submission, we're saying to them, how are you going to monitor or measure self-exclusion when a woman just stops going to the gym or stops going to the spa? Or we hear, roller derby is a massive sport here. It's quite physical, and it was a big sport for women, but they've opened it up to self-ID. And, I know two women. One of them was a sexual assault survivor, and she got into roller derby to get her sort of physicality and confidence back. And then, of course, a trans woman joins. And she gets PTSD triggered whenever this, male body smashes up against her on the roller derby court. And so she's just self-excluded. Now, how's the government going to measure that? There's no metric for that. It's going to be anecdotal stories, which they'll dismiss as transphobic. So it's a catch 22. And I don't know how they'll measure it.
De facto, you know, not with the clause 80 excluded. What will happen as a result of this is more and more men perhaps entering women's prisons or rape shelters, for example. Mm-hmm. Is that what you think might occur?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've already got corrections had a policy to place prisoners based on their self-identity. So even before this birth certificate law comes in, but they could exclude, you know, people if they had a history of sexual violence or something like that. But now with a birth certificate saying they're female, the current corrections law is that they have to be in the case of a dispute about what prison estate they belong in, they must be placed based on what's on their birth certificate, which means a violent sexual predator can change his birth certificate to say female, and the law would have to place him in the female prison estate. They recognise that as a major loophole, and so their solution is to go back and change the corrections law to sort of build themselves some leeway in there. But is that going to happen before this law comes into force? I don't know. But self-ID is already a problem in prisons. There's already been assaults, male on female, in prisons. This law will make it worse. It'll make it worse in all female spaces and services, but particularly shelters. I've spoken to women who run homeless shelters here, the Māori Women's Welfare League here. You know, they're not set up to cater for males and female spaces, and they're concerned about how they're going to manage it.
Right. So just to reiterate some of the main problems with changing one's birth certificate or statutory self-ID, there's the problem of, for example, data, statistical evidence keeping. There's the problem of women's only spaces, including prisons and rape refuge shelters and so on. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the problem, which is medical, right? So the statistics recorded of medical research will now be kind of useless well. So,
yeah. And crime statistics.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a major one already. We know violent crime, sexual crimes, mostly committed by males. So it doesn't take many to skew the data.
Well, it's great that you've been getting so much support as a result of what must be a really stressful situation. Again, with the idea from Posy Parker, the woman, adult, human, female, which seemed to work brilliantly in the UK. So hopefully will work out for you as well. And as you said, anyone can go and comment on this, right? On the bill?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. So go to speakupforwomen.nz. That's our website, or check out our pinned tweet at speakupforwomen.nz. Yeah, and go through and make a submission. We really need your voices.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for tuning in. You can find Speak Up for Women on Twitter at speakup4WomenNZ. In order to submit your response to the sex self-identification clauses, you can visit their website, speakupforwomen.nz. You can reach me on Twitter at womenreadwomen or by email at contact@womens-voices.org.